Opening day. Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast on Monday, April 4th. Oh, we're talking FanDuel, DraftKings, your daily fantasy lineups. We haven't talked about that at all, but finally get a chance to do that. I'm Adam Azer. I got Scott White, Heath Cummings here. What's up, guys? How was your baseball Sunday? I'm sure it was great for you, Heath.
Yeah, my team is 1-0. How's your team?
About to be 0-1. Thank you for asking.
They're not even playing today.
Yeah, they are.
The Yankees?
Yeah, 1 p.m. Dallas Keuchel.
I thought they'd already called the game.
Oh, really?
I think they postponed it.
Oh, DFS guys all over the rainouts.
You got to be kidding me. Already they postponed it?
Yep, they have postponed opening day.
Oh, my, come on. It's 9:20 in the morning. They already postponed opening day?
There's too much pageantry that goes on. You can't have it raining. There's ominous clouds in the sky.
There's pageants. There's big flags spread across the field.
Well, I still maintain they're about to be 0-1, whether it's today, tomorrow, whenever. They will lose to Dallas.
They will be undefeated for another day.
Yeah, okay. Works for me. And Scott, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Adam. I am lovely. It was a very, very Royals-like win for them yesterday,
yes.
Wasn't it?
Yes,
I don't know that Joaquin Soria is going to work out, though. That doesn't seem like a Royals reliever to me.
Yeah, that was certainly... That stood out, but also what stood out was how unlucky Matt Harvey was and how Francisco Liriano was and how good Marcus Stroman was. But we'll talk about all that a little bit later. But first, obviously AJ Pollock is the main story today, but I also have a huge beef and I'm glad that Monday is a Scott Heath day. We're going to try to keep a consistent schedule in terms of talent. On which days, and Monday should be mostly Scott and Heath. And I need to talk to you. And you guys need to listen to me and do as I tell you.
Okay.
All right. As commissioners in some of the leagues that we are in, Scott, you're the commissioner in a few. Heath, you're the commissioner in the second podcast league for the people. I cannot believe we still do free agent ad drops whenever at will. No fab, no waivers. Make the change. After we get off the air, first thing you do, you make the change, you put it on waivers or fab or something. But we can't operate like this anymore. It's 2016.
There are literally only two leagues we play. Well, I actually don't know about the non-rejects for the people league.
It has waivers. If someone's dropped, they go on waivers.
Right. Okay, so there's three leagues. Three leagues we play that...
And we are the commissioner of all three.
Well, yeah, but I'm kind of... I guess I'm the commissioner for pretty much every league we do in-house.
Adam's the commissioner of two of them.
So I would say, for the most part, I agree with you, Adam. Mm-hmm. It's just a matter of actually taking the initiative to make the change.
Well, this is
I think it might be a little too late at this point.
No, it's not. It's not too late.
It might be.
No, we're not making changes after the season started.
Yeah.
No, I disagree. Make a change if it makes the league better.
But it doesn't... It's not... detrimental
no,
to have it this way.
Nothing I mean, annoys
we've
me
been doing
more
it this way a long time
than going to pick somebody up on Monday and realizing they're going to sit on waivers and I don't get to use them until next week.
Well, that's why you have to have a little forethought. You don't wait until Monday morning to make
Monday
your ad drops.
Is when I want to do my ad drops.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think you guys are letting your constituents down, your league constituents who elected you commissioner.
I feel like you're one of the first to
pick up a
guy when something happens.
Yeah,
you benefit
it benefits me, but I'd still rather play in a better format.
Okay.
So you think
all right,
about
well,
it.
That's very sacrificial of you, Adam.
What would be
sacrificial is refusing to take advantage of that format because you dislike it so much.
No, that would just be stupid. That's not gonna happen. So, AJ Pollock. Ah, man, pretty important player for me in my favorite league, our auction league. He was my most expensive player, and I honestly feel like I'm done. I feel like I am done in that league. Maybe I'll finish third, but I think that's my ceiling. Am I overreacting here?
I mean, it's terrible. You're not overreacting. I feel like you may be overreacting when you get to the point, okay, well, I'm just obviously not going to win anymore because you will not be the last owner to lose one of his two most expensive players. I think that's safe to say. Now the tricky part about replacing Pollock specifically, and I get why you got him in the auction league. I went heavily after him in all the roto auction leagues because his skill set is so unique. with the batting average, steals, elite batting average and steals guy, but also some power. You know, and a steals guy who does anything else is so scarce in today's game. So, he was a top priority for me in those auctions too. I fortunately got outbid on him in just about all of them.
Yeah, you're lucky.
The only league that I had AJ Pollock in was the one league that I don't think there is any recovering from losing AJ Pollock. And that was the NL only auction league. And I don't see how.
Yeah. I mean, in leagues with nothing, just a barren waiver wire, a bunch of middle relievers, basically. Yeah. That's, you're going to have to make a trade probably at some point. I think, you know, head to head leagues is one thing. You just get the best outfielder you can find. But when you're talking about a roto league where you have to make up for those different areas where you expected him to be a prime contributor, you're going to have to probably rely on several guys to make up those losses. I wrote a little article about it over the weekend, and I suggested trying to get like a Billy Burns who can help you in speed and average, and then doing something where you upgrade by like a 10 to a dozen home runs at another spot. Like I suggested, maybe swapping out a Brandon Belt for a Mark Trumbo, something like that. Mm-hmm. And that might be a way to start out. And otherwise, you just have to play waiver wire aggressively. There are going to be players who nobody sees coming who end up having spectacular seasons, and they're not even owned right now. So you just need to be on the ball with your pickups. But that was true anyway.
Sure. Now, Heath, I'll go to you for this. So,
okay.
There's a report, Fox Sports, John Morosi reporting that Arizona could be looking at Michael Bourne or Will Venable. And also, we don't have a timetable on A.J. Pollock. So a lot of people have been asking me, should I drop A.J. Pollock? I think it makes sense to wait. He should have surgery maybe tomorrow. And hopefully by the end of the week, we'll have a more definitive timeline. Let's see what the deal is with the fractured elbow. But right now, Socrates Brito, he might, I don't know if he's going to platoon or whatnot, but stands to benefit a lot. What do you think about Brito and also Chris Owings out in center field for the Diamondbacks?
I'm probably more interested in hoping that Brito gets more at-bats, because I think we've mostly seen what Chris Owings is going to do with the bat, and there's still some hope for upside with Brito.
Right, and he's a guy who can get you the steals, right? I mean, he's an average steals guy, like batting average and steals, less power. Is he sort of, well, how would you, okay, what is Socrates Brito?
I feel like he's talking upside here, not necessarily what he's going to be right away. Mm-hmm. I think he could be like a more powerful Ender Inciarte in terms of helping a batting average with some steals, but you know, also maybe 15 plus home runs if, you know, in a perfect world.
And will he sit against left-handed pitchers?
At least to start out, I think that's the idea. Chris Owings would play center field against the lefties. But, you know, if Brito sets the world on fire, that could obviously change.
Yeah, because I don't feel like even against lefties, Chris Owings is, I would just, if I was them, I'd rather have Brito get the at-bats. What's Chris Owings going to do for you against lefties?
I don't know. Chris, I'm surprised they have any confidence in Chris Owings at all. He's one of those players who, like, why is he still a thing? Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, he's just been nothing in every opportunity he's gotten. So I don't know why they continue to give him chances.
By the way, Gene Segura is going to play second base for the Diamondbacks, so he'll soon be eligible at shortstop and second base. But Brito is 22% owned, and he's somebody I picked up in that league. And I'll just throw one other thing out there, just something I was thinking. And look, you can lose great players in fantasy and win a lot. It happens. It's tough to lose somebody potentially for the season and get absolutely zero production from them, you know, right before the season they get hurt. That's rare. At least if you had gotten like a month from Pollock, that would have been nice. But you can recover. I'm not going to say I'm done. I think it's going to be tough for me to win my Pollock Roto League because it's a somewhat deep league. But was thinking about what I could possibly do, and maybe I'll see how things go for a month or so, see how my team is doing. And if it's just not working, if I don't have the hitting, maybe I just trade my pitching for hitting, and not all of it, obviously, and try to fill in on the waiver wire with starting pitching, which is much easier to do than hitting.
That's what I've already done in our NL-only league, and it's kind of funny. I had an offer made to me in that league like 2 days after the draft, and I couldn't decide. And so I just didn't do anything with it, and the person never withdrew it. And
oh, that is sneaky.
Oh, yeah.
It wasn't a Pollock. I didn't trade Pollock.
No. Go ahead and finish your story.
They offered Desclafani and Cargo for Gerrit Cole. And I didn't feel like that was enough.
I still don't feel like it's enough. But.
Well, I basically, in that league, have one starting outfielder on my team. And my pitching was very strong for an NL-only team. So I went ahead and pulled the trigger on the trade a month after the offer was made to me.
What's sneaky about it is, you know, it took you so long to respond to that trade that it's quite possible this guy, also an industry person,
right,
completely forgot about it. If you had accepted that trade and he was like, oh, I didn't know that was still out there, I don't want it, I feel like you would have had to let him take that back.
Yeah, what would you have done, Heath?
I probably would have left it up to the commissioner. If Adam's the commissioner, I know what would have happened.
I probably would have reversed it. But yeah, you do have to be on top of it if you make trade offers to rescind them.
Like,
but
if you leave a trade offer sitting out there for a month, if you don't want to do it anymore, then take it down.
Well, this easily forgotten. Maybe my biggest pet peeve of fantasy baseball. If you make an offer to somebody and they just never say anything. Like,
yeah,
it reject it if you don't want it. That's
I couldn't
fine.
Decide.
It doesn't hurt my feelings. If you can't decide, I can understand that. But at least send me a note saying, hey, I'm really torn on this trade. I'm thinking about it. Go ahead and leave it up for me, and I'll get back to you soon. That is the proper way to handle it, not just to leave it out there sitting forever.
In season, I totally agree. This was before the season. I was just waiting for more information to come in.
Mm-hmm.
And we got more information.
Yeah,
and
I decided you got more information too.
I needed the hitting.
To add one point about Pollock, because you mentioned, Adam, he could potentially be out for the season. And that's absolutely true. He actually suffered the same injury to the same elbow in 2010 as a minor leaguer, which, you know, part of what's frustrating about this is I feel like I should have known better. You know,
I read what you wrote and I thought you were being too hard on yourself.
No, I disagree. How many times do we bring it up on the podcast and we're just like, yeah, you know, he says he's dealt with it before. It's probably no big deal. And we just took his word for it. We just took the Diamondbacks' word for it. And I'm not saying like AJ Pollock should have been an absolute do not draft, but I think we should have dropped him in the ranking some to compensate for this concern about this elbow. Because the moment it happened, I was like, yeah, you know, that doesn't surprise me.
Did you know that he had a previous elbow injury? Because I did not until after the fact when it was reported.
Well, no, I just knew. I didn't know he had that injury in the minors in 2010. If I had, you know, it would have been even more reason to downgrade him. But just the fact that there was this unresolved, achy elbow that he cost him pretty much all of spring training. He had returned to play some minor league games, but this game Friday night where he suffered an injury was his first against major league competition since originally going down. That, I mean, how big of a deal have I made about Johnny Cueto and Michael Pineda's unresolved elbow issues all offseason? I've been afraid to touch them. And
they're pitchers,
I was
though.
Just willing to overlook it for Pollock.
And for what it's worth, we don't know that Cueto's issues are unresolved.
Well, they never really identified what the problem is. That's unresolved in my
mind. But he's been pitching and it hasn't been hurting him or preventing him from pitching.
Okay.
Fair
enough. Okay. I wouldn't drop Pollock, by the way.
Right.
Not until we know for sure it's season ending. The upside is way, even if he's back, even if it's like an early August timetable, you're going to want to stash him for that.
Okay, let's get into the Sunday action. Also, some daily fantasy stuff. We have a daily fantasy live podcast that you baseball players, fantasy baseball players, are going to absolutely have to download. Heath Cummings, Chris Towers are on that. And Heath, who's the third member of your crew there?
Mike McClure from Sportsline.
There you go. And the three of them give some excellent advice. They've been doing it for NBA. Now you can get their MLB advice. They already recorded today's podcast, so you can check that out. Daily Fantasy Live is the name of it. Now, before we get into everything, I have to remind you about one of the best apps I have ever downloaded. It is the SeatGeek app. I absolutely love it. This is truly, truly a very cool app or website if you go to SeatGeek.com. And what this is, it's better than StubHub. It is the best place to buy and sell sports and concert tickets. Why is it the best? Because, first of all, they pull all the tickets available on other sites into one place. So you're going to save time. You're never going to miss a deal. You can also rank the ticket choices by the best value. So, all right, here's a $20 seat, or here's usually a $100 seat that's going for $40. Something like that. You can see the best values regardless of price, or of course you can sort by price if that's what's most important for you. There are no hidden fees. SeatGeek is always honest and upfront about the price, and unlike StubHub, SeatGeek's going to show you the full ticket price from start to finish. They're never going to try to trick you with huge fees on the checkout page. This is really cool. I mean, you go on the app and you look at a seat and you can see their interactive map. You can get the view from that seat before you even buy the ticket. You're going to really love SeatGeek, so make sure you check it out. If you want to save $20, we got a pretty sweet offer for you. Our listeners are getting a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. So here's how you get that $20 rebate on tickets. You download the free SeatGeek app. You go to the settings tab and click on add a promo code. And our promo code is FANTASY, all caps, FANTASY. SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. Again, download the free SeatGeek app and enter the promo code FANTASY today. I love this app. You will as well. Also, the website is great, SeatGeek.com. All right, just to go through the news here. Couple players either getting or talking contract extensions. Gregory Polanco, 5-year extension worth at least $35 million with Pittsburgh. There are a couple of option years on that as well. Texas, this, you know, getting up there in age, but they don't care. They're talking contract extension with Adrian Beltre, according to John Heyman. Yesterday, Matt Holliday started at first base against the, lefty, Francisco Liriano, but Tommy Pham left with an oblique injury. Pham was actually batting second in the order, so Holliday moved to left field. Matt Adams came in and played first base, which will be unusual against a lefty. But, yeah, any thoughts on that? I mean, Scott, I know you like Tommy Pham. Obviously, mm-hmm. we have to see about the oblique injury, but him batting second against lefties, that was pretty cool.
Yeah, and I think there's a chance. I mean, you actually have the splits here in the notes. Tommy Pham was actually even better against right-handers than left-handers last year, so there's a chance. If Holliday proves able at first base and neither Matt Adams nor Brandon Moss really takes off with the bat, there's a chance Pham could become the everyday left fielder with Holliday playing first base every day. So, I think Pham is a guy. Look, if we're talking sneaky upside guys who might slip by people on the waiver wire, Pham has that across the board skill set, much like Pollock, where, you know, obviously, if I expected him to be Pollock, I'd own him across the board. But there's at least that chance that he has this explosive breakout this year. And for that reason, I think he's worth owning and stashing in NL-only leagues, even if this oblique injury does end up costing him a little bit of time.
All right, Scott Kazmir appears to be healthy, and he is a two-start pitcher this week. So there you go. Washington is skipping Joe Ross. He'll start out the season in the bullpen. You can see that a lot, I guess, the first week or so. There are a lot of off days, so teams don't need to go to five starters. Chase Headley, I was going to say he might not be ready to play opening day due to illness, but they're not playing today, so forget it. Jung Ho Gong's on the DL, but he could be back before the end of April. And Tampa Bay released James Loney. So how about some position battles to update you on? CeCe Sabathia, a very tenuous hold on the Yankees' fifth starter job. Ross Stripling is the Dodgers' fifth starting pitcher. Heath, I think you picked up Stripling in our 16-team podcast league.
Yes, I think I did too. I don't really expect very much, but I thought, you know, I'd like to have him on my roster in a deep league like that just in case. If he could hold on to that spot, that could be a decent source in a league that wasn't quality starts over wins.
But you sound like you're talking yourself out of
move
you just made.
You look at him and he's a 26-year-old that's never made it to the majors that had a 3.8 ERA in AA last year.
Sure. Good control, but I don't think he has enough bat missing ability to make an impact in standard mixed leagues.
I think that was the surprising part, and the reason that he won the job is he did miss a lot of bats in spring training.
Okay, so there you go. Ross Stripling, a name I never knew. Jake Lamb will be the Arizona regular third baseman. Let me look up Lamb's ownership, and you guys tell me if you think it's too low. I'm going to guess it's around, what do you think, 20% for Jake Lamb?
I was going to guess 40.
40%? All right, I'll get it 1 second. Next note here, Yasmani Grandal opening the season on the DL. Could be back pretty soon. And Oakland starting pitcher Felix DuBrant left Saturday's start with a forearm injury, so that means Jesse Hahn could replace DuBrant. Drew Pomeranz is in the San Diego rotation.
Yay!
Yeah.
I'm excited.
What kind of leagues would you want to own Pomeranz in?
Any points league, probably, with what that makes the distinction between starting pitcher and relief pitcher.
Right.
I guess, you know, if it's like 10 teams or shallower, you may not really have reason to add him, anybody that far down the list, but he could be a big surprise. I was really excited about him as a SPARP last year, so it'd be wrong not to express similar enthusiasm now.
Jake Lamb, 24% owned, by the way. How owned do you think he should be? Closer to 40?
I think he should be closer to 40.
Okay. Third baseman there for the Arizona Diamondbacks. Give him a look. So, how about yesterday's games, guys? Pittsburgh 4, St. Louis 1. What stood out to you? Heath Cummings.
I think Chris Towers is getting ready to write something about Adam Wainwright. I believe his velocity was quite a bit down yesterday, and which may not be a big deal. He's an older player. It was really cold. Maybe it's just going to take him a while to work up to his normal velocity, but he is a guy that basically missed all of last year. And coming back with little velocity would be a concern.
Yeah, I watched it. He was about 89, I think, for the most part.
What's he normally, like 91?
I think he's usually at low 90s.
Yeah. So, yeah, that seems like part of just standard fluctuation during the year. But, you know, obviously we just have one start to look at.
Right.
And like you said, the Achilles injury. Chris is really fearful of that injury for the effect it's had on players in other sports.
Right.
And you could even point to Ryan Howard in baseball. He hasn't been the same since he suffered a similar injury.
It's one of the worst injuries you can have in sports,
yeah.
I think.
But, you know, it wasn't a disaster start. It looked like a typical Wainwright start, just on the lower end. So I don't know. Once Chris started talking about that, it made me a little more reluctant to draft Wainwright. But if I already owned Wainwright, I wouldn't be, like, looking to shop him right now or anything.
Adam Wainwright threw 6 innings, gave up 3 runs on 6 hits with 3 walks and only 3 strikeouts. And that's probably a concerning number there because he just hasn't been striking out. Even when he's been good over the last couple of years, briefly last year, obviously, in 2014, the strikeouts were down. So something to keep in mind there. John Jaso, 6% owned. He led off for Pittsburgh and... You know, Heath, I gotta say, these OBP leagues are making me consider different things. So, Jaso, he's had an on-base percentage of 380 or higher in 3 of his last 4 seasons. How about that?
Listen, if John Jaso is going to hit leadoff all year, he should be much higher than 6% owned.
Oh, that much higher? He's a non-power hitting platoon first baseman.
Yeah,
how much higher can he go?
I'm just saying, that's a bunch of at-bats.
If he was still catcher eligible, I'd agree with you, but he's not. He's not even first base eligible right now.
Yeah, he will be shortly. I think he'll, I mean, he's going to score a bunch of runs.
No, because he's only going to start against lefties. He's going to score like 70 runs.
Okay.
He's only going to start against lefties?
Right.
Against righties.
Right, sorry.
Yes.
Yeah. That's
which
the plan. Mike Morse will start against lefties.
Which is a bigger side of the platoon, and I would guess... Playing in the National League, you're probably going to get a bat most games he doesn't start.
I know the on base is good, but I can't really see this guy batting leadoff all year. He's just not a good enough hitter. But, you know, 380 on base, pretty good.
That's good enough.
David Freese was batting third.
So what?
Yeah, their lineup was wacky.
This is why I didn't pick the Pirates to make the playoffs.
Well, Gong eventually will be part of this equation, too.
Yeah.
But Freeze, you know, he has a pretty good history against lefties. Last year, not as much, but they were facing a righty, so never mind. And, Francisco Cervelli, 49% owned. He had a nice season. He's another good on-base guy.
Nice day.
Yeah, he did have a nice day. So far, though, he's had a very nice season, Scott.
Okay.
You can't take away from
Freeze. He had a nice season last year, actually.
He did.
Top 10 catcher in both formats.
Yeah, 49%. So he's available if you need him. Liriano, could this have been more Francisco Liriano? 6 scoreless innings, 3 hits, 5 walks, 10 strikeouts.
No, that is what you drafted him for. I mean, obviously the strikeouts and walks won't always be so extreme, but yeah, he's going to be a so-so whip guy with a high strikeout rate.
All right, how about Tampa Bay and Toronto? What did you guys think about Marcus Stroman, who gave up 1 run through 8 innings, came out for the 9th, gave up a home run, And then Ozuna came in and allowed an inherited runner to score. So it ends up being 8 innings, 3 runs for Stroman with 5 strikeouts, but he threw 98 pitches, 74 strikes, 15 ground balls. What'd you think?
That was a good start. I'm not overly excited about it because I didn't think coming into the year that Tampa Bay was very good, especially offensively. And he still didn't really strike anybody out. So it's a good start. If you drafted him, you're very happy with that.
Here's what I like about it. And I think part of the reason you didn't like Stroman is because he missed most of last season through less than 50 innings between the regular season and playoffs.
Right.
And they let him go 8 in the first game of the season. I don't think there's anything to worry about with the innings. I mean, obviously there's potential he could get hurt again and have more, you know, not reach a high number of innings because of that. But
right.
I don't think they're going to hold him back to keep his innings count down just because he missed a lot of time last year. It wasn't an arm injury he missed it with. I think he's their ace and they're going to use him as such. 8 innings on opening day shows that.
Can I, real quick, Adam, I know this is out of order, but can I go back to Pittsburgh for one thing?
Oh, please, yeah.
There was a cool stat Darren Willman from MLB.com tweeted out. Gregory Polanco had two hits yesterday, 109 miles per hour and 112 miles per hour were the exit velocity.
Oh, yeah, they were scorched.
Yeah, he only hit 16 balls that hard all year last year.
Well, that's nice to hear. That's nice to hear. Oh, another stat kind of like that from this Toronto game.
Okay, and then I have one, so go ahead.
Okay. Troy Tulowitzki, first plate appearance of the season. He draws a walk, right?
Mm-hmm.
He had 2 walks. Oh, crap. The data's not available.
No, it isn't.
Baseball reference is failing. Oh, no, wait. I can access 2015 stats. All right, here's the stat. He had all of 2 walks. Through,
here we go, guys. This is going to be worth it.
May 18th last year.
Yeah,
and that was a big reason his OPS was down with the Rockies. He, for some weird reason, he just wasn't walking at all. Very first plate appearance this year, Troy Tulowitzki draws a walk. So, I thought it was interesting.
Okay, I got something for you here. Luke Gregerson will be the primary closer for the Houston Astros, according to AJ Hinch. How about that?
That is a gut. The sound of Scott and I being gut punched.
Oh,
yeah, that kind of sucks. Because it's so funny. Because I was gonna say, you know, I have what's his name?
Ken Giles.
In Toronto, Storin in a few leagues, and I'm just gonna have to drop him soon because I think Ozuna is so good and is not gonna lose that role. But now we have to deal with this situation again. I'm lucky enough to say that in my one Ken Giles league, I also drafted Gregerson. But ouch! This is I'm equally as surprised about this as I was about the Stroman Storin decision. Not Stroman, sorry, Ozuna Storin decision.
I'm less surprised because we did at least get a little warning leading up to this. And I had downgraded Giles a good 5 spots in my rankings.
I am super happy. I just checked my spreadsheet, and I have 0 shares of Ken Giles.
Oh, that's good for you.
I drafted him a lot in our mocks,
mm-hmm.
So I'm glad that none of our real leagues I drafted him.
I don't know why the Astros gave up 2 top pitching prospects to get Giles.
He was pretty bad, wasn't he?
In spring training?
Are they putting weight into spring training performance?
I don't see why they would. That doesn't seem like a very Astros thing to do. But I don't really know who the Astros are anymore because the last couple of years, in the name of contending, they've made these trades that to me seem lopsided. The Giles trade seemed lopsided, but okay, you really need a closer to get to the next level. I could at least understand the rationale, but now they're not even going to use him as a closer. I don't know how long it'll last. Maybe the first time Gregerson blows a save, they'll go back to Giles, and because he'll have great stats then as opposed to those spring stats he put up, and they'll be comfortable with it at that point. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know what they're doing. I wouldn't want to drop Giles in a roto league at least.
Oh, thank you guys for not changing your waiver policies yet. I just picked up Luke Gregerson in our roto league. So yeah, that's cool.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Why don't you win that league more often, Adam?
I finished second last year. You know what happened last year in that league?
You ran into a buzzsaw is what happened last year.
Heath and I entered the final week basically tied. right? It was epic. We were going back and forth for weeks. Heath and I entered the final week pretty much tied. Somehow he beat me by like 13 points. I had this horrible week and Heath had this amazing week. And, I finished second. So, well, now I have Luke Gregerson, so I feel better about that. And I can put him in my lineup for this week because they haven't played yet. How about, that's another new awesome feature on CBS, by the way.
The transaction applies to the next week.
Yep.
Yes, the feature is worth mentioning.
You're right.
Now you can set your lineup. It works kind of like fantasy football where, the first game of the week doesn't lock your whole lineup. It just locks the players who play in that first game. And then once each player locks the first game his team plays for the week.
The difference between this and fantasy football is you pick somebody up after the first game of the week. You can't use them till next week.
Right.
Like if you pick somebody up on Saturday in fantasy football, you can use them on Sunday. You can't use, but the nice thing is you can at least take Ken Giles out of your lineup if you want to.
Oh, yes. Yes, you can do that. Anything else from this Tampa Bay-Toronto game? The stat I was going to give was I saw it on the scrolling bottom line on ESPN that Tampa Bay chased so many pitches out of the strike zone yesterday. The highest percentage of pitches that an opponent has chased in Stroman's career. So I don't know if that says more about Stroman's pitching or Tampa Bay's hitting, but that was part of his effectiveness yesterday.
Dickerson homered in his first game as a Ray.
Sure did.
You know, each of the players who were worried about because they made their careers in Colorado, homered in this game at Tropicana Field, one of the most extreme pitcher parks in baseball. So, I mean, as much as you can make of that, it was nice to see.
We just got a good email, like
what was
just
it?
Minutes ago. Harry Schmidt just sent us an email. I think I might have said this when we were talking about the Chapman suspension. I thought it was funny. Someone mentioned that the Yankees might post Capone games early in the year due to the Chapman suspension. Didn't think they would do it the first game of the season, though.
I don't know. Do they share an off day on Thursday with the Astros? They might make this up pretty quickly.
They should.
Yeah. So can I just go back to the Giles thing? Because I was picking up Gregerson in a league and not really listening. And I heard Scott say that he wouldn't drop Ken Giles in a Roto league. But do you think this is going to last, or do you think eventually Giles is going to... And if you already answered that, I apologize.
I mentioned it, yeah.
what was the answer?
I think if Gregerson opens the door even a crack for Giles, and Giles is pitching like we know he can, then yeah, they'll make the switch. Okay. I think maybe it's just a comfort thing with the manager at this point. This is, you know, just me hypothesizing.
Right.
The manager didn't see enough for Giles to overtake Gregerson this spring, and he already has a comfort level with Gregerson. But once he sees true Giles, it'll be pretty easy to make the swap.
Oh, I think, by the way, I think the Yankees and Astros are off tomorrow. So, they're off on the 5th, so they'll probably just play it then. So, I don't know about that Chapman thing, but that was funny. Okay, anyway, fellas, let's talk about the Mets and the Royals. Michael Conforto, only 81% owned. He had a very nice game. Conforto and Polanco are both probably available in some 10-team leagues. They're less than 90% owned, so, you know, guys to keep an eye on, certainly with some breakout potential. Of course, the Mets didn't have to make any outfield decisions. They were able to DH Conforto, but he had a good game. Raymond Fuentes started in right field and batted ninth for the Royals. He went 0-for-3. The Royals had no extra base hits in this game. Matt Harvey pitched pretty damn well. There were some infield singles. Lagares, I thought, should have had a ball in center field that he didn't. But it was just an unfortunately bad.
You're gonna call out Lagares for not catching a ball they shouldn't have, and you're not gonna mention anything about Cespedes?
Well, but that was an unearned run. Cespedes, of course, dropped that ball in the first inning. The defense let Harvey down yesterday, and the Royals, you know, just kind of put the ball, hit them where they ain't.
That's kind of what the Royals do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was a Royals win.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
they're a bad matchup, not because they're a prolific offense, but because they're so hard to strike out that the pitcher is just very dependent on BABIP luck.
Now, listen, we got Edinson Volquez, 67% owned, and 67% owned in a two-start week, so you imagine he'll be dropped. He was the number 33 pitcher in points leagues last year. Volquez was 42nd in Roto, and he has a history, at least the last 2 years, of getting off to really good starts for like four or five starts. What do you guys think of Volquez?
You know that I like him a lot more than Scott does. I think Scott had him ranked like 90th or something coming into the year.
Oh, come on. It wasn't that low.
It was that low when we first started arguing about him. You know, he's not exciting.
No.
He's not going to be elite.
No.
But he can be a very solid third or fourth starter on your fantasy team. I think if you have high upside, good number one, number two pitchers, if you have a pair of aces at the top, and then you got a bunch of hitters that were really good, Volquez is a nice end of the rotation guy.
All right. You went from in that same sentence, went from number three, number four to end of rotation.
Well,
guy.
You only start five in points leagues.
Yeah. He's not somebody you're going to start every week. If you own him, you're own him to start in two start weeks because he is secure. But yeah, he's not going to be an ace, and particularly early in the season when none of us have any clue how the season's going to play out. I would rather devote my roster spots to players with upside.
So you'd be fine dropping him if you had just picked him up for the two-start week. You'd drop him today to get somebody else?
I mean, it'd probably have to be like a 10-team league or fewer. I think any deeper than that, I'm fine keeping him around as kind of my seventh starter, you know?
Okay.
But yeah, if like, I don't know, before the end of the week, like Brandon Finnegan strikes out 10 in six innings or something, I might be willing to make that swap just in the hope that it's a sign of things to come for Finnegan.
All right. And by the way, Volquez in a roto league or a categories league, he doesn't strike out a lot of guys and he's had a pretty bad whip. So I think more of a points league kind of guy. Guys, let's take a look at the most added list on CBSSports.com. And let's start with number one, Roberto Ozuna. All right, we can, whatever.
He's there's a lot of, yeah. No, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, he's 76% owned Roberto Ozuna, yep. So.
Okay.
Should be higher, I think.
Yeah, should be. He will be soon.
Travis Shaw, Juan Nicasio, Trevor Story, Jeremy Jeffress. And when we go through the most added list, they're sorted by percentage gained, not who's owned in the most leagues. You know, it's who's had right. The biggest change.
Right.
So the top five is Ozuna, Shaw, Nicasio, Story, and Jeffress. Any thoughts, guys?
My biggest is probably Jeremy Jeffress. I mean, I guess when you look at Ozuna being 76% owned, Jeffress proportionally at 51 makes sense. But it always astounded me. In the later drafts we did, after we knew Will Smith was out of the running and Jeremy Jeffress was the clear closer for the Brewers, how he didn't get more attention, because a lot of those bottom of the barrel closer options, they didn't definitively have the job. And I think Jeffress is a better pitcher than J.J. Hoover, probably more than an injury depleted Jason Grilly, just a guy who in any league where teams start more than two relievers, he needs to be owned.
And see, I think that's the question. I think people just have concerns about how good Jeremy Jeffress really is and if he's going to be able to hang on to this role or if he's just going to hurt you.
Just look at the numbers last year.
Yeah.
The whip was kind of high, but otherwise,
right.
Very good.
Yeah. I mean, he had a good year last year.
So, but you don't really sound like you're buying it, Heath.
Well, no, I think he should be owned. I'm not saying that. I'm not particularly excited about him.
Okay. A little bit further down, Adam Conley is number six. What do you guys think about him? Conley is Marlins starting pitcher, owned in 33% of leagues.
I know there's plenty of people in this office that are very excited about Adam Conley.
Because they're Marlins fans.
Yeah, because they're Marlins
and fans.
And
they're a pitcher Marlins fans can get excited about, which is a low threshold beyond Jose Fernandez.
Well, would you rather have Conley or Aaron Sanchez?
Sanchez, Sparper, otherwise.
Conley or Nathan Carnes, just looking at other guys on the most added list.
Carnes, and that was a guy I was adding a lot
in
over the weekends once it was clear, obviously, that he was the fifth starter instead of James Paxton. He deserves to be owned in kind of a similar vein to Edinson Volquez.
Okay. Do you think Mike Fiers at 64% is underowned?
Yes.
Heath?
That was another guy I was adding, even over Carnes.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. That seems low. I don't know what percentage of our leagues are less than 12 teams. I don't know that Mike Fiers should be owned in a 10-team league.
Well, should Trevor Story?
Probably not.
Yeah, and he's 11% higher ownership.
Right.
Fires. So, and look, Juan Nicasio is owned in more leagues than Mike Fiers. Juan Nicasio, looking at this list, is owned in more leagues than Vince Velasquez.
That's terrible.
Yeah.
We've done a bad job.
I think we've tried to contain the hype while still addressing the potential value here in Nicasio.
I got a good question on Twitter about Velasquez. They said, who do you think will be better in 2017? I'm sure it was a keeper question. Vincent Velasquez or Zach Wheeler?
In 2017?
Yes. I thought that was a really good question.
Yeah, it is a good question. Right now I lean Wheeler, but after Velasquez's first start, I might do a little flip-flop
there. It's funny. I told the guy Wheeler after thinking about it for a long time,
yeah,
and then immediately replied to him again, said, never mind Velasquez.
And you probably will reply to him again at some point and say, actually, Wheeler. Some more players on the most added list. After Conley and Aaron Sanchez, we have Tyler White. We have Vince Velasquez, 62% owned. Chris Tillman, I'm guessing, he's pitching today, so he's probably a two-star pitcher at 49%. Be wary there. Nathan Carnes, Alex Colome, Socrates Brito, Mike Fiers, and Dallier Pinogrisio. Hinojosa. There you go.
I'm not sure I got the accents right, but yeah, the H is silent and the J makes the H sound.
Oh, right. Hinojosa. Okay.
Yeah.
So he's a potential Phillies closer. We're just going to have to see how that one shakes out, guys, in Philadelphia.
Yeah, it may take a while for them to get an opportunity to see who the closer is.
Who are they playing? They're playing Cincinnati today. Really.
Yeah, that's true. Maybe game two, they could get an opportunity. I don't think they're going to beat Iglesias today.
You never know. I mean, Hellickson versus Iglesias, probably. If there's one underdog, I was thinking about maybe the Padres, Tyson Ross versus Kershaw. You never know. People make too much of pitching matchups sometimes.
I don't think that's true.
No, people I do make, think that's true.
People make too much of a bad team's ability to beat good teams.
Yeah, of course.
Or they don't make enough, I guess, of bad teams' ability to beat good teams on any given day. I mean, Phillies could win today. It wouldn't mean anything to anybody. It's one game of 162. They're going to win at least 60 times.
If I was going to pick one underdog, I would probably go, well, they're barely an underdog, but I'd probably go with Felix and the Mariners.
Are they an underdog today against Sonny Gray?
No, they are against Cole Hamels.
Cole Hamels, right.
Slight underdog, yes.
Okay, and we got Garrett. I'm looking forward to seeing Garrett Richards tonight. Anybody that you guys are really circling that you want to see? I think Iglesias and Garrett Richards are two that come to mind, guys I really want to watch today.
Raisel Iglesias is at the top of my list. And then, of course, Tyson Ross, because I've got him on like 90% of my teams.
Scott, anyone for you? Got a lot of aces to choose from today.
I'm scanning through the pitching matchups right now.
Oh, I'd also like to watch Kluber.
I'd like to see Felix. I'd like to see does Felix look like Felix?
Oh, with such a pain in the butt that the national championship game is on tonight.
Oh, you know who I'm looking forward to seeing? Drew Smiley against Toronto.
Smiley gets hammered today, I'm not going to panic or hold it against him.
Left-handed fly ball pitcher.
That's what I'm saying. If it is a bad matchup for him. So if he turns in one of these starts where he goes six shutout innings and strikes out 11.
Okay,
that would be something.
This is not outside the realm of possibility based on what he was doing this spring and last September.
Him in DFS today.
That's why, I didn't say, you didn't ask me who do you think is going to have the best pitching performance today. You asked me who I'm interested in seeing, and right. I'm interested in seeing Drew Smiley.
But you just put out, not necessarily expectation. I wish you had got a little bit lower than that. Can we go six innings, two runs, eight strikeouts? Because I'd be pretty pumped about that.
I'd be pretty pumped too.
Good. A lot to look forward to today. Great pitchers on the mound for sure. And hopefully the weather cooperates in most places. All right, Heath, give us a little preview of the Daily Fantasy Live podcast and who you like today. I feel like everybody's going to be stacking giants against Willy Peralta.
I looked through your notes, and we are we're very similar in our thought process. Now, you've got some names, Angel Pagan, Brandon Crawford.
Wait, let me preface this.
Okay.
When I make my notes,
yes,
think of it as more as me just like thinking out loud. They're not necessarily...
guys that you like.
Yeah, not necessarily. Like,
well,
look,
the top
I mean,
thing that says San Francisco hitters versus Willie Peralta.
That one I like. But when you get to like Carl Crawford, don't hold me to that one.
Okay. I think that on that Giants team, though, I'm more interested in Denard Span and Joe Panik, assuming they're the first two hitters in the lineup.
Okay.
Fantastic matchup for them. They're actually my second favorite stack of the day. My favorite stack is the Orioles at home against Irvin Santana.
Big Irv.
Big Irv. I really like the Orioles in that matchup, because even though like it's very nice that the Giants get to go on the road and play in such a favorable park in Milwaukee, but the Orioles players are at home and batters do generally hit better at home. Raisel Iglesias, definitely my favorite non-stud pitcher. I think in cash games you probably play Kershaw. But I like Scherzer and Sale a lot.
Okay. Sale has Oakland?
Sale does have Oakland, yes.
And Scherzer is at the Braves.
The other really interesting thing, because you were talking about some of the late games, this is a very rare situation where we have a slate that lineups will lock at 1:05, and the last game of the slate starts at 10:05. So there will be a lot of games on this slate that we don't have lineups before lineups lock.
Well, I was thinking about just playing the late games. I'm full disclosure, I live in New York, so I will not be playing Daily Fantasy.
Right.
But, you know, we could give advice just for the late games. I mean, whatever. You could look at the full slate today. We'll get the podcast out early enough. Julio, I'll throw out some numbers. You tell me if they mean anything to you. Julio Teheran had a 2.89 ERA at home last year. So could he be a sneaky play against the Nationals?
I do think that means something. I don't think you want to play a pitcher that's that big of an underdog. Max Scherzer going up against that lineup, I don't know how they score a run.
I think historically, Tehran's pretty bad against the Nationals too.
Right.
And that's, you know, a lot of the same players.
I mean, obviously you want to start a good pitcher. You want to start somebody that has high strikeout potential, but you definitely want to feel confident in their likelihood of getting a win. Mm-hmm. And Tehran has one of the worst chances of the day to get a win.
And Bryce Harper, 10 for 23 with 3 home runs, 5 RBI against Julio Teheran. Is it worth spending on Bryce Harper?
Bryce Harper is in my original lineup. Okay. Not because of that, but he is.
So the Dodgers are facing Tyson Ross. Carl Crawford is 9 for 18 with 4 doubles against Ross. And Andre Ethier is 7 for 19 with 3 doubles against Ross. Do you care about either of those?
Well, Andre Ethier's hurt, right?
Yes.
Okay. Again, the Dodgers, if I'm just playing the late slate and I see that Carl Crawford's hitting towards the top of the lineup, yes. If he's hitting down at 7th or 8th, I'm not going to play him against Tyson Ross.
Do you like the Diamondbacks against Jorge De La Rosa?
Absolutely.
Okay. De La Rosa is a lefty, so if Brito's in the lineup, maybe you don't want to go with him. But Peralta actually has good numbers against De La Rosa, but he's left-handed. Like, are there any in particular...
I think De La Rosa's kind of gone back and forth to where he's really good against lefties and then he isn't like good at all against lefties.
Okay.
Mm. I mean, Goldschmidt obviously is somebody you have to consider. I think Gene Segura is a nice option because he's pretty cheap.
Chris Owings. So Chris Owings, I could see him starting in center field today and Brito sitting because is 4 for 9 with a triple and a home run against De La Rosa.
I think they've already said that Chris Owings is going to be in the opening day lineup.
Okay.
And he is dirt cheap, only 2,100. Speaking of dirt cheap, if you want to go, you know, Wellington Castillo has a little bit of success against left-handed pitchers. I would not be that surprised if Wellington Castillo went deep and he's only 2,300.
All right. I have two guys who you might want to put in your lineup that have bad numbers against their opposing pitcher. Tell me if you care. Adam Jones, 5 for 21 with 2 doubles against Irvin Santana, and Nolan Arenado, 5 for 24 with 3 doubles against Zach Greinke.
I'm probably not going to start any hitters against Zach Greinke, but I don't care that Adam Jones has had a little bit of trouble with Irvin Santana.
Big Irv.
See, I usually do care just because I feel like if there are enough players in the slate, why go with a guy who's 5 for 21?
That's like a 250 batting average, right? It's not that bad.
With only 2 doubles, though. No home runs.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Irvin Santana has been a lot of different pitchers his career. I don't know which one is Adam Jones saw.
That's a good point. You always have to consider that. All right, well, if you want more Daily Fantasy Live, the podcast, check it out.
Yeah, if you give us a review on iTunes, that'd be fantastic.
That would be tremendous there. All right, let's read some emails.
I think you mean you, Adam.
What's that?
You need to review them.
I don't review any of our podcasts. I feel like that's dishonest.
To present... do presidential candidates not vote for themselves?
I don't do it. I never, ever, ever have written a negative review about a competing podcast. So just not our style.
All right.
I could see writing a review, I suppose. It's not the worst thing. You're right about that. Let's
I just meant voting. I didn't even mean writing a review.
Yeah, well, let's make podcasting great again.
Okay.
So, emails here from, Kobe in Pennsylvania. He says, "Dear Roy, Jay, and Jim." I don't know who they are. I'll get back to you. Here's the question.
Roy, Jay, and Jim. That's Roy Williams,
that's
Jay
office.
Wright, and Jim Boeheim?
No, that's The Office.
Boeheim?
No, wait.
I was right. Pam Love Interests on The Office, but I didn't know who Jay was. So.
I thought it was The Office, too, but you're right.
Yeah.
So Kobe's question, 10-team points league, 5 outfielders, corner infield, middle infielder, 2 DL spots. So he drafted Pollock. He's got Pollock, Brantley, Jung-Ho Kang, and Darvish with only 2 DL spots. So now he wants to know, Kobe was offered Matt Kemp and Hanley Ramirez for Michael Brantley and Yordano Ventura. Would you guys do that? He's the Pollock owner and the Brantley owner. He's offered Kemp and Hanley for Brantley and Yordano Ventura. Does not need the pitching, by the way. He has Kluber, Strasburg, no. Felix, Hamels, Tanaka, Corbin, and Shields.
No. Don't. I mean, you're going to have to wait a little while for Brantley, but he's going. I mean, he could be AJ Pollock, but with half the steals. You know, I mean, that's he's your best hope of getting Pollock-like production.
Okay. From Jordan, dear Timu, Bobby, and Dale. Who are these people?
Two of the three sound like King of the Hill. I don't know Timu, though.
Oh, this is the Talladega Nights.
Oh, okay.
I don't know who Timu is either, but I do like that movie. With Pollock's injury, leaving me a big hole in my outfield, I am going to be in desperate need. Okay, so typo there. I'm going to be in desperate need of stolen bases in an 11-team 6x6 Roto League. So, who should I add? Inciarte, Odubel Herrera, or Austin Jackson?
I would go with Inciarte. I do like Odubel Herrera.
Someone also offered him Christian Yelich and Trevor Story for AJ Pollock. Would you make that trade?
Yeah. Quickly.
Yeah, I would too.
that might be one of those trades where the guy was like, "Oh, I forgot I offered it."
If it's a keeper league, that's different, but he didn't specify.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
From King, he says, "Dear Winston, Nick, and Coach." And by the way, did you guys see my new team name in the podcast for the People League?
Oh, that was you?
Uh-huh. Schmidt and CeCe with CeCe Sabathia?
Yeah.
It's pretty good, right?
Well, who's Schmidt?
You're
Schmidt?
Yeah.
Okay.
Here's the question. If Matt Harvey is the Dark Knight and Noah Syndergaard is Thor, who should Jacob deGrom be? Should we pick a nickname outside of Marvel and DC? I vote for the Winter Soldier.
What is like the RC Cola of comics? The third one that nobody knows about.
Capcom? As he said, and he actually wrote that in his email.
Capcom?
Yeah.
I enjoy the movies, but I never read the comics.
If we come up with a name for Jacob deGrom, we might be able to, you know, coin it and have it go viral.
Don't they go on the deGrominator?
Well, that would be terrible because then he already has a name.
Maybe that's just our local Met fans that call him that.
I think we should call him Grimace. Just make him a McDonald's character. Why not?
DeGrimace?
Yeah, I mean, Grimace. It kind of, you know, he's got the GR in the name.
I think he looks more like the Hamburglar.
Well, I wasn't actually going, you know, I was thinking Grimace like he's, but he's a McDonald's character, so. I don't know if it's flattering.
So how about we put it up to the listeners? If you have a good nickname for Jacob deGrom, let's get it started on this podcast. A couple more emails. This is from Tim from Sammamish, Washington. He gave me a pronunciation guide. Who would you rather stash in your NA slot, Tyler Glasnow or Jose Berrios, and why?
Glasnow. Because I think he's better, and I think he'll have an easier time breaking. You know, I say that, but I think Berrios, based on how long he lasted this spring,
I think Berrios
might be closer, but I just feel like there's an easier way in for Glasnow. I mean,
they both have crappy pitchers at the back of the rotations. They're probably both already better than the fifth starter on their team.
Except Berrios has Tyler Duffy in front of him too, I would think. in the pecking order.
Yeah.
And I guess the tiebreaker to me is I just think Last Down's better.
Heath?
I'm going to go Berrios. I think he gets up sooner.
And but last one
that's
here?
They're both good options.
Last one's from Derek. It says, Dear Avon, Omar, and Q. And that is The Wire. My league is a 12-team standard roto league. 5 offensive, 5 pitching categories. We have 9 pitching spots and 1 bench pitching spot. So this is my first year playing fantasy baseball. In my fantasy league, you can change lineups each day. I have an extra pitcher spot that I don't use, so today I picked up Volquez. Tomorrow I plan on dropping him and putting Darren O'Day or Gregerson in his spot. Oh, Gregerson, do you think it's better to just keep picking up and dropping either starting pitchers or relievers who will be pitching that day? No closers are available on the waiver wire. All right, so obviously
Gregerson is
but or would you hang on to guys like Volquez and Kyle Hendricks? What do you think is a better use, a back end of the rotation guy or streaming with relief pitchers?
I wouldn't start any back end of the rotation guys because they'll drag down your ERA and WHIP. But I mean, stream as much as you can without dropping the, you know, real high end starting pitchers. I mean, if they're letting you exploit it in that way, go ahead and do it. I mean, picking up great middle relievers on days when there's not an obvious starting pitcher to pick up makes a lot of sense to me.
Yep.
Cool. Hey,
that
guys.
Be a good effort.
First regular season podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Done.
Gone.
Great job.
In the bag.
Yeah, awesome. Enjoy opening day. Very excited. Right. Okay, that's it for me. For Scott White, Heath Cummings, I'm Adam Hazer. Thank you all for listening, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.